The African National Congress will be holding a special National Executive Committee meeting this weekend, which will look at issues relating to its upcoming elective conference that need urgent attention. The party has been faced with countless court cases by its own members, allegations of fake membership, and disputes around branch general meetings. The party decided to convene the special meeting, saying that the key issue on the agenda will be Secretary General Gwede Mantashe's organizational report, which must be finalized before the December conference. Joining me on the line for some analysis ahead of the ruling party's NEC meeting is political analyst and director of programs at the AWOL Socioeconomic Research Institute, Ibrahim Fakir. Ibrahim, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening, Karim. Nice to chat to you.
Now, of course, I don't want to be Gwede Mantashe. And of course, we know that this is an attempt to give some shape and some form to that all-important report that he will have to present at conference. Now, we know how difficult a time he had at the policy conference. You and I were both there to present that diagnostic report. This is not going to be an easy task, Ibrahim.
No, I mean, I think his first and most fundamental challenge is going to be keeping the distending factions of the ANC together, because yes, I think that's his massive kind of challenge. You know, he doesn't want to be the Secretary General which is going to preside over what people might think is an imminent split. But whether there is a split or not, Karima is neither here nor there. I mean, for him, the reality is he is presiding over a structure which has branches in complete disarray. If you think about it, there's about a week left, or slightly less, before all of the nominations and voting processes in branches, especially on policy, have to be finalized. There's still roughly about 1,000 and more branches, yes, which still need to conclude their process, right? So he's got that to bother about. He's got to bother about the fact that he's got to present an organizational report which actually would reflect the real state of the organization. And I would not be surprised if he rehearses everything that is in previous Secretary General's reports. The question of social distance, the question of credential manipulation, the question of bogus branches, the question of non-functional branches, the question of membership.
Accreditation process and credentials process.
Absolutely, but also between that, you know, what to reflect on the state of branches in terms of their actual content. What do they actually do? What were branches involved in? And there'll be very little to report on, I'm afraid. So the bulk of his report is going to focus on the kind of problems in the ANC, as it justly should, because it has to be an objective and accurate reflection of what's going on. And that's really where his difficulty is going to be. What he's going to have to contend with is those people who believe that everything in the ANC is hunky-dory, and they're going to fight him tooth and nail to sort of present a slightly altered picture.
Who benefits, Ibrahim, if this conference doesn't sit? I saw earlier a television headline saying, Trevor Manuel saying that President Jacob Zuma is hoping to collapse the conference. Who, in your view, benefits if this conference doesn't go ahead?
Well, clearly it's him. It's President Zuma. Because, you see, I think even if his preferred candidate does win at the end of this year, if he collapses the conference, he will basically guarantee immunizing himself from any serious probity, not just in the state, but also within the party, over the next year and a half before the next election. And his real shielding of probity is required in the party so that he is not recalled. Because I think there are real fears that even if his preferred candidate wins, in order to keep the organization together, firstly, but also to buy a degree of credibility and establish or re-establish the legitimacy of the ANC, they are going to have to be seen to be doing something about the allegations of out-and-out corruption. So I think that reality has dawned on him, that even if his preferred successor is the winner at the end of this year, they have to do something. They have to make a gesture of some kind. And one of those gestures would be to ask him to step down earlier, which is something he doesn't want. Or whether he can be in a position to bargain some kind of immunity from state prosecution. So not probity inside the party, but from the criminal justice authorities.
Now,
I think that's the kind of thing he wants to negotiate, and he's not sure he can if he's not in the position to be in power himself.
And I suppose even if his anointed successor does come to power and she wants to flex an independent kind of arm and saying, I don't owe anyone something, the truth of the matter is she will be indebted, because it's literally President Jacob Zuma's stormtroopers that are doing all the campaigning for NDZ.
Well, but it's not just her who is at risk of having to enter into Faustian Pact. It's any other person who people might believe would be a Trojan horse successor if his chosen anointed successor is not a successful one. And people speculate, although they speculate less, that it might be Zweli Mkhize. But I would put an alternative scenario to you, that even if Cyril Ramaphosa wins, and of course he's shown a degree of fortitude in the way in which he's put out his slate, and I think he's basically said, sort of devil may care, take the hindmost, doesn't matter, I'm going to put out who I want. I think he'll be forced, if he's going to think about governing in any degree of stability, to have to reach out to those people who are currently his detractors in the ANC. And I think Jacob Zuma also fears that some of those people, because they're all fickle and they're all indebted to Zuma, but they would believe that they can, you know, for their longevity, they'd be prepared to be indebted to someone else. And they would have to enter into some kind of pact or something with Cyril Ramaphosa. So he's got to make these calculations any which way things pan out. So it's not a clear and easy ride for him, because there's a lot dependent, and a lot of it is dependent on what kind of thing he can agree to anyone with anyone. And that's why the best outcome for him is that there isn't in fact a conference. It's his only safe guarantee of being completely immunized from anything.
Now, Ibrahim, we also know that this special NEC meeting comes against the background, as you've mentioned, where Cyril Ramaphosa last weekend in Sekhukhune, of course, spoke about his so-called dream team. He mentioned the people, and the reaction was palpable inside the ANC, even though it was quite a hypocritical reaction. You know, there was outrage, and it was quite ironic that the statement that was put out in the name of the Secretary General, advising against slates and, of course, cautioning people to not usurp the rights of the branches. Cyril Ramaphosa then puts out a second statement saying that he, in fact, doesn't have the power to nominate his running mates. These people's names are in play anyway. They have been nominated. So he's not putting names in the discussion that hasn't been put there by those very same branches. But Zizi Kodwa then on the show having to come on and say that they didn't so much rebuke Cyril, but it is an attempt to kind of rein in the discussion. All a bit a much of madness. I mean, the truth of the matter is slates have always been there, even though they have been denied. And as Cyril Ramaphosa rightly says, the names of the people are already in play. They have, in fact, been nominated by branches.
Well, it's a discussion I think is going to come up at the special NEC, but it will be a small aspect of the discussion. As you're rightly saying, it's much ado about nothing. I mean, this issue is out there. It's ventilated. It's very clear. There's a very curious logic at play here. I mean, Ramaphosa has no power to influence nominations processes now. He has no power to decide who goes on the ballot for the top six positions or for the 82 NEC positions for that matter anyway. So that branch, that right still resides in branches. They can still do whatever they want. They can still choose however they want. The same is true for voting delegates. All he's done is he's expressed a preference now. And this is where I suppose they might get stuck at the NEC meeting, the special NEC meeting this weekend. The question is, You're not usurping the right of anyone to vote in any which way. So why discuss this? Why discuss this? Why should it even be a matter of discussion? I think what he's done is it's important in the sense that I think it now entrenches democracy in the ANC. Those who don't like it at the end of this year, I think will make a calculation about, if we don't like this, we don't like the shape and the form of what the ANC is becoming, I think one of them will be forced to walk away. But that's precisely what Gwede Mantashe has to avoid. Mm. But how he can avoid it, given that they believe fundamentally different things, of course, is going to be the thing to watch. He, of course, averted at the NEC meeting, but it will all come out to play at the end of the year.
Now, the question of the management of some of these court processes. Before I spoke with you, I spoke with one of the counselors that is part of the original applicants in the case involving KwaZulu-Natal's provincial leadership. Their matter set down for the 30th of November. It comes after this NEC, but I think just before the final NEC, before the conference.
Conference.
Yeah, we've got potential court cases in, we've got a court case in the Free State. We've got court cases in the Northern Cape, the Eastern Cape, and then, of course, also in the Bojanala region in the Northwest. Do you see this conference being interdicted on the last minute? And do you see this NEC making an accommodation for that?
It's very possible that it might be interdicted, and it might be interdicted by people who support Zuma and his he wants to be his anointed successor. There are two court cases in the Eastern Cape next week, as far as I know, one in Umtata and one in East London. And those two both hinge on the electoral process in the Eastern Cape PEC, the Provincial Electoral Congress. Now, if the Provincial Electoral Congresses are already giving you indications, and even in the lead up to Mangaung, though there were serious problems in the Free State, those only came to light towards the end.
Yes.
The point I'm trying to make here is that here you're talking about five different court cases, excluding KwaZulu-Natal, that makes it six.
Yeah.
From big provinces. And this early, and they've been going on for a while, so this is early in the process. The prospect of the real prospect of an interdict is very, very, it's very likely. Where it comes from, one doesn't know. But I think the Zuma crowd, if you want to call him that way in colloquial terms, the incentive is high for them to want to interdict this. And I think if they're unable to interdict it, then they will simply go for disruption. If they don't get the disruption right, then it just breaks out into complete chaos, and then it becomes violent, and then it becomes seriously conflictual. And this is where I think the ANC has to take a serious, long, hard look at itself, because once that happens in the ANC, it literally will begin to affect the whole society. Thankfully, what has happened over the last 5 years, at least since Polokwane, so it's a period of 10 years, but over the last 5 years, it's strengthened. Our civil society no longer simply mirrors the fractures which were mirrored in the ruling party. We now have a much more independent, much more robust civil society. So the danger of it infecting society as a whole is not as high as it might have been in 2007. But nevertheless, it is still a serious worry. And some people would believe that if you're unable to contain that, it starts spilling over into society as a whole, and when it does so, then you become much more securocratic, much more authoritarian, and we've already seen that streak emergent, at least not in the ANC, but in government.
Mm. Now, Ibrahim, the NEC meeting also comes as there is a feverish attempt, you know, at trying to close the door on the revelations contained in the explosive book by Jacques Poe, The President's Keepers. We saw last night a blackout during the launch in Hyde Park. This evening there was, of course, a more successful launch in the sense that there was no blackout in Pretoria, in Brooklyn. But, you know, 1,000 people pitching last night for a book launch. We've seen at Ridi Tlabi's book launch the same. You know, there is a hunger for understanding this regime of President Jacob Zuma. But it also goes with a momentum that is in some sections of our society around people being really, really fed up. Are we likely to see the ANC doing what it normally does at these gatherings, saying it's not as if the ANC sits there and say, let's discuss books and what the issues are? But, I mean, how does the NEC sit and not discuss the president being a tax dodger, for example?
Well, I mean, this is the conundrum that the NEC face, and this is
unless, of course, you're the ANC and you haven't paid your own tax bill.
well, that's part of the problem, and that's what's chronicled in the book. So the Secretary General is sitting there as the person who presides over the affairs of the organization, administratively at least. And he's the person who is going to have to carry the can, because I think people in the ANC are very good, often turning on each other in times of serious and deep crisis and deep trouble. So they will say, SG, where were you? Did you not tell us about this? Or alternatively, if they did discuss it in NEC meetings, it means that they all become culpable. So that's the reason they'll remain silent. But the real consequence then is, if you remain silent about these issues, why should ordinary people in society believe that they owe a degree of tax morality to the tax authority? That's the first consequence. The second consequence is that you're the party who are presiding over the way in which the state ought to function. But you can't get your own internal party affairs sorted properly, whether administratively or otherwise. How and why should you be trusted to run the affairs of society if you aren't able to run your own internal affairs properly? The third is, of course, the NEC, I think, is going to shirk this. Mm. And they're going to shirk this because, you know, Jacques Poe's book, interesting and important as it is not the source of all the problems and is not the source of all the issues. He is chronicling things which have been out in the public domain, in bits and bobs, in drips and drabs, all over the show. And the NEC has failed to talk about this. The ANC caucus in Parliament, who is meant to have oversight over these things, have failed to talk about this. And here's where the NEC will, or its biggest incentive not to talk about it, is that even those who are now pretending to be clean, even those who are pretending now to be standing against this kind of problem, are going to realize that either they dropped the ball on oversight, and they weren't there when they should have been asking serious questions. So that's at best. They are simply culpable in turning a blind eye. And more seriously, that they are themselves culpable.
Yeah.
So either way, it doesn't look good for them.
All right. That's where we will have to leave it. We'll, of course, keep you posted throughout 702 and on EWN as developments happen at the weekend, with that meeting happening as it usually does out in Irene, that meeting getting underway over the weekend.